One was, we asked the question, why wasn't George Wallace being seen with John Spark? And then we waited about a week to see whether Wallace would be seen with Spark, and he wasn't. So then we asked, why wasn't George Wallace endorsing Spark? So we waited another week, and George Wallace didn't endorse Spark. And then the third ad we read, we said, the reason he's not being seen and the reason he's not endorsing is because he doesn't want him to win. And he didn't say anything about that either. But I had, as chairman, I guess had built into the Republican Party a great deal of camaraderie and had made it a kind of a unitized party, which seemed to me necessary in building the thing against the odds they had run. And then for me to seem disloyal to the party by making a pitch for Wallace votes while Martin was running for governor, which implicitly said that Martin doesn't have enough votes and I need some Wallace votes. That angered the Republicans a great deal and lost me considerable support among people that normally would vote for me within the party. And then in addition to that, gave the enemies that I had within the party a very good issue upon which to oppose me for leadership within the party. But I didn't think we could just walk off after 1966 and let Birch Society and that element secure control of the Republican Party. So in 1968, I ran for national commitment in order to see that that was not done. Martin out of the clear blue sky, and I went to Gadsden, talked to him, see whether he was interested in the national commitment's race. Said absolutely not. What he was interested in, perhaps, was the Senate race that year. Was I interested in that? I told him, no, I sure wasn't interested in that. So I announced the national committeeman, and some of these people went over there and convinced him that if I was elected national committeeman, apparently, that I was going to do something bad to him. So he announced for national committeeman against me. And we had a knockdown, drag-out fight, and he won. In Mobile. So the fight was inconclusive as far as the state committee was concerned, because I don't believe it was elected that year in that convention. So we had to do the same thing again in 1970. I didn't have much taste for it, but in any event, the job had to be done. So even though I wasn't personally involved except running for member of the state committee, which I lost. I kind of organized the fight in Jefferson County and to some extent around the rest of the state, so that in the convention of 1970 we had another fight, and we managed to win that and keep control of the state committee, and Dick Bennett was elected chairman, not by a very great margin, and I was defeated for a seat on the state committee in that state convention, which I kind of looked at as the termination of my active participation in leadership of the party.
What's Martin doing now?
I have no idea.
Is he still involved?
Politically?
Yeah.
I don't think so. No, I think he tried to do something in
Because the inter-party fight in Alabama is almost comparable to that in Florida.
Of course, I haven't been, it has absolutely decimated the party here. I don't know really what the fight has been in Florida in recent years.
Well, the Gurney versus Kramer. Gurney and Kramer. The 70s Senate race.
Well, I guess so, except that you had two candidates fighting in that situation. Whereas I guess I never have essentially been a candidate, although I ran for the Senate. That wasn't really my essential role in the party.
How do you assess George Wallace?
Well, I just have the greatest respect for his political acumen and his ability. I'm not sure, strictly from the standpoint of pragmatic politics, there's a more able person on the national scene politically. He's just a natural in the political business. He can just put his hand out the window and tell closer than anybody I've ever seen how an election's going to come out or what the people feel.
Why? I mean, most politicians after 8 years, 10 years, down
he's
the
just
tube.
Got a marvelous ability. I mean, that's my opinion and assessment of it. He really just has a marvelous ability to communicate with people and understand what it is they're thinking on any particular issues. And I don't know that he's tied to any particular positions on any particular issues. I mean, George Wallace is a professional politician. And his idea and concept of politics is to be in office. And his idea is to win. And the positions you have to take to win are the ones you take. And I'm not saying that in any critical tone by any manner of means. He can assess what the interests of the people of the electorate are and adequately articulate them in words they can understand. And that's the formula. So he is a very accomplished professional politician. And I think he's got integrity in that profession or business, whatever you want to term it. How he's going to do in the future, I guess, is anybody's guess.
Why did Red Blunt get beat worse than you did by John Sparkman in a year when Richard Nixon got, 70-something percent of the vote in Alabama?
Oh, I think, of course, it's difficult for one candidate to assess the race of another without some prejudice. I think Red got mixed up on the race issue. Was a mistake he made. And secondly, he attempted to project an impression to the people of Alabama that they didn't quite equate with what they understood him to be. And then when those two elements combined to start him on the downside, he then attacked Sparkman personally. And although I think the people of Alabama might be of a mind to think about recalling Senator Sparkman, because of many elements, the time he's been there, his age, and so forth, I don't think they want to do it unceremoniously. John Sparkman's been a senator for 30-some-odd years, a vice presidential candidate, has done a lot of things for a lot of people and a lot for the state. And if they were going to call him home, they weren't going to do it under the onus of a personal attack. So I think there was a mistake on the race issue. And I think there was a mistake in attempting to convey the impression that Red was a good old country boy. And then, when those two factors got him in the ditch, he exacerbated the situation by attacking Sparkman personally. And that resulted in the landslide.
Do you think he had an opportunity to get a substantial black vote?
No. I wouldn't think so. No, I think Senator Sparkman has got the loyalty of the blacks in the state. Pretty tight and continuously. And when I say Red made a mistake on the race issue, I don't suggest that he should have come out as a segregationist or taken any position on the race issue. What he did do was equivocate, I think. At least it came out to me that he was. Say one thing one day, and then he brought people's attention to his taking a position on the race issue, and then he equivocated. Now you can stay away from it if you want to, or you can get into it if you want to. But if you get into it and you want to win in Alabama, you better come down on the white side. Otherwise, you better stay away from it. Seems to me, just as a pragmatic view. You're not going to win in the middle. That's very difficult. And you're not going to win on the black side. yet.
Where do you see the Republican Party heading after Wallace leaves the state, leaves the governor's office?
Well, I think it, the Republican Party needs an electoral opportunity to regroup itself, to gain some new strength, and to start anew at the state level. I don't think that that's necessarily tied to what Governor Wallace does, except as it may relate to his activities on the national scene in the presidential election. Because I would think almost certainly that it's going to take a presidential opportunity to recreate the Republican Party in Alabama. Now, how Wallace complicates that is something we have yet to see. He's got it complicated. But I would think that the 1976 presidential election may well be another watershed like 64, a very significant and critical election for the nation as a whole. That kind of a motivation, if it's sensed, and it will be by the people general, which is what would make it a watershed, that's the kind of thing that would present an opportunity for leadership in the Republican Party, to rally the Republican Party within that kind of a atmosphere.
Are there any readily identifiable statewide Republican leaders now?
Oh, I certainly think that Martin was one of the best candidates I've ever seen.
Is he still considered?
I don't know how people consider him. I would think that he wouldn't be much of a force. Certainly he's not much of a force within the party, I wouldn't think. Whether he's much of a force among the electorate generally is always difficult to tell. I mean, candidates resurrect themselves.
Is there anybody else? I mean, if you were thinking of fielding candidates for statewide office, where would you go today in the Republican Party?
Well, of course, your three congressmen are very well known, and I would say very popular.
But there's not much likelihood that they will run statewide office.
Yeah, I would hope not, unless it be a Senate seat. I think we probably made a mistake back in the 60s, in 72. By not having one of the congressmen run for the Senate. But with Blunt appearing as strong as he did, I think they probably just scared everybody off of that situation.
How much did Nixon's letter to Sparkman undercut Blunt?
I'm not sure I recall that letter specifically. I know there was some, I think there was some activity in the White House that hurt Blunt a little bit, but I don't think that kind of a thing was more than superficial, basically. You know, I think it caused some discomfort to the Blunt campaign and probably cost him a little bit of credibility. But I don't know that it was, I don't know that it's one of those things that gets you from 50% to 30%.
What was the effect on the Republican Party
of that letter?
Yeah, now
The activities, or really the lack of activities on behalf of Blunt, maybe even the activities on behalf of Sparkman by the committee to re-elect in the White House.
I don't think that bothered the Republicans much. Blunt, more or less, had built his own campaign organization. And I don't know how much really he was depending on the Republican organization, or how much communication there was. Of course, I wasn't in the Blunt campaign. I was on his steering committee, but the steering committee never met. We met once for the first time in September of 1971 and never met again. So I don't really know what happened in the Blunt campaign. But I was active in the Nixon campaign statewide, which mostly involved the Republican Party. And I don't recall anything very traumatic happening to Republicans as a result of any White House activity or lack of White House activity. It certainly wasn't very appropriate for a couple of the things that the White House did. I think they sent an airplane down for Sparkman. And then there was some statement made on a press conference Beth Sparkman out of the White House, which I'm sure was a little bit damaging and unsettling. But I don't know if the voters paid a lot of attention. But to get back to your question, we've got a couple of members of the House of Representatives, Bert Nettles and Doug Hale in Huntsville. I'm sure there must be people I'm leaving out, but I don't know of any really prominent Republicans, of course you have Blunt, that are really known statewide, but I'm not sure that's necessarily a deterrent.
But that suggests that leadership in the future is going to have to come from people we don't even really know about.
I would hope that would be the case.
Which probably maybe from the legislature, where you are expecting to pick up 15 or 20 seats in the House.
It might come from the legislature. That would be unusual. You don't ordinarily build a new institution out of people who, by virtue of their very jobs, are self-seeking. And in the short run, self-seeking. You ordinarily don't expect a candidate to give you much help in building a party.
But what we're saying is that
logically shouldn't look for that.
They're really not identifiable at this point.
No,
we're looking at something that's going to be
the Republican Party is barely identifiable.
How about the mayor of Birmingham? Is he
George Siebel's is certainly one. I knew that.
Is he perceived as a potential statewide candidate?
He certainly could be a statewide candidate. He's popular and has done a good job in the city of Birmingham.
And generally,
his health, I think, is a problem. He's had two or three heart attacks.
But he's generally perceived as a progressive.
Yes, I would say so.
Dynamic, so
very much so. And I persuaded George Sebas to run the first time for the legislature back in 1962.
Are you going to run
We've
again?
We've been good friends since, and I admire him a great deal. I have no plans to run again, or even to be active in politics.
What happened to your earlier ambition?
I don't know that I've really had any ambition for public office, particularly. In all these discussions that we had with Martin, I told him that I didn't want to run for the Senate. In the early part of it, when we were talking about running for governor or running for the Senate, he would say to me, well, I'm going to run for governor, why don't you run for the Senate? And I said to him specifically that I was not going to run for the Senate back in February of 66. So I had no particular burning ambition. I don't mean to suggest that I would not, once committed to run, that I would not have liked to have won, nor that I would not like to be in the Senate. I'm not a person who says, well, now that I've run, I'm really glad I lost. I'm not glad I lost. I'm sorry I lost. I wish I'd won. And it would be very nice to be in the Senate. Anybody would be a fool to have the opportunity, I would think, at least for one term, and not want to go to the United States Senate. But I don't have my ambition was never to be a candidate for public office, particularly. It seemed to me at that particular time that it was necessary for me to be a candidate for the Senate in order to satisfy what responsibility I had to the party itself, because I'd been very instrumental in building it and very instrumental in recruiting the candidates for the legislature and the state Senate. As it turned out, I didn't help them any, but that was one of the motivating forces of running, in addition to wanting to be in the Senate. But I enjoyed the party politics, and still do, although I'm not very active. The running for office never held any particular appeal for me.
What was Goldwater's appeal in the South and to people like you beyond appealing the South, beyond his vote against the Civil Rights Act? This is what has been widely attributed to a lot of support he got from traditionally racially conservative areas that had not voted Republican before. But there were other elements of appeal that didn't have anything to do with race. What were those elements?
Oh, I think all the various positions he took on issues which generally were could be seen as conservative, which could be grouped under the general heading of a reduction in power at the federal level and an increase in power at the state level. I think basically is why the South was for Goldwater, and on the race issue. they interpreted some of those positions as being more favorable to their position on race, even though the positions themselves may not have had to do with the race.
They voted against the Civil Rights Act.
His vote against Civil Rights was quite, and I remember I was in his office when he went to the floor to vote against that. He'd just returned from discussing it with General Eisenhower. But
what was his attitude then? And why did he vote? Why was he saying he was voting against it?
He felt surely that was the constitutional position he should take. And it was a very troubled day for him. Very troubled day. And politically, he interpreted it as one that was going to cost him dearly. He had no illusions about that. He didn't need it for the Southern delegates. I can say that to you very confidently. We would have had difficulty, but I don't think he would have lost in the South on the basis of his civil rights votes. He may have lost some votes in the general election. And he may have lost a few delegates, but I don't think it was going to be a serious matter as far as that convention was concerned. But it cost him severely in the November election. He knew it was going to. But I think now and thought then that Senator Goldwater is a man of principle and the most honest and best person I've ever met. And he thought that's what the right thing to do was to vote against it, and that's what he did.
What's the effect, and what will be the effect of Watergate?
I don't know. I think that's hard to assess while we're right in the middle of it. Certainly can't help us. Quite the extent to which it's going to hurt us, I don't know.
What we hear is that it's already hurt considerably this year in terms of candidate recruitment.
I wouldn't be surprised at that, particularly in your states where your two-party system like Michigan is very well.
But even here.
Even here.
In Alabama.
I doubt whether that's the case for that. That may be a good reason, but that's not the basic reason they're not getting candidates.
What is?
No, it's the ration. It may be the ration.
Yeah, I don't think Watergate is bothering them in Alabama. It's not enough for the Rebellion Party in Alabama for Watergate to bother. They just don't have we just don't have the body of the Rebellion Party as a breathing, ongoing, productive machinery that excites the voters and attracts support to.
What's your reaction to the Democratic charge that we've heard from more than one person, that the Republican Party is too much of a country club party in Alabama? It won't ever have appeal to mass voters.
They moved from a post office kind of a party to a country club party.
I don't know that that's justified. Certainly a lot of the leaders in the Rebellion Party are in country clubs. But I don't know that that classifies it as if you judge a party by its candidates, I think we probably drew in 1966 pretty broadly. Although basically I would say it would be a middle class party, economically. And we certainly didn't draw candidates from labor unions or the labor people in the state. We didn't draw them at all from the blacks until recently. So I would say basically, even looking at it from the candidates, that it was a middle class, economically speaking, party. And I'm sure a lot of them are in country clubs. I don't know if that has any particular effect on...
No, they were talking about the country club mentality, whatever that is, suggesting that the party is interested in keeping itself elitist and small and not really interested in attracting large number of voters.
I think that's foolishness. The leaders of the Republican Party are interested in winning elections. I don't know of any deliberate attempt to keep the party small. I mean, Dick Bennett is a state chairman, and if there's any person that's from 1948 on has labored to broaden the party more than he, I don't know who it could be. And when you get in the ditch with something, you know, a lot of people got all kinds of reasons for why you're staying in the ditch. But basically, we haven't seen an opportunity to get out. I think as soon as the opportunity arises, and hopefully there will be one, there's no assurance that there will be, then I think the party will respond to it, and the leadership will too. But Goldwater, we had one problem in Southern politics, a major problem. We could get majorities in the urban areas of Dallas, Columbia, South Carolina, Charlottesville, Richmond, Birmingham, Mobile, Nashville. Well, not Nashville is an exception, but other cities and urban areas of the South, Charlotte, North Carolina. But until we crack the black belts of the South, from East Texas on into the Tidewater of Virginia, I mean, they voted something like 4-5-1 for Jack Kennedy in 1960, when Jack Kennedy was stood for everything they didn't stand for. Now, what we needed in the Republican Party was somebody to break those black belts, because although you could elect a congressman from St. Petersburg and you could elect a congressman from Birmingham, you weren't going to elect anybody statewide as long as you had the black belt areas voting against you 5-6-1. Just wasn't possible. What Goldwater did was break those black belts. Now, it's true that he got a reduced percentage in the urban areas from Nixon and Eisenhower. But I think probably across the South he got about the same percentage, which meant that he got a dramatic increase over Nixon and Eisenhower in the black belt areas across the South. And that made it possible to have a Republican Party in the South. Secondly, Goldwater defeated the leaders of the Eastern establishment of the Republican Party, along with their allies throughout the country, and made it possible for Western and Southern leadership to participate in the leadership of the National Republican Party. Which is why we were, two of the reasons we were for it.
There was some talk in not a whole lot, but there was some talk in 1968 of a Nixon-Brooke ticket having effect, being effective in the South. What would be the, what would that do to the, or for the Republican Party in Alabama if Ed Brooke were on a ticket as a vice presidential candidate in 1976?
I don't know that I'd even speculate on that. I don't know what that would do. Depends, I take it, to a large extent, on what was on the other side, who they were running against.
Kennedy and Wallace.
Kennedy and Wallace would be very tough in Alabama, I would think. I don't know whether you can get those two together, though. Guess they don't know either.
Well, isn't there a new George Wallace?
That's what he says.
You believe him?
I don't think there's a new George Wallace. I think George Wallace is the same as he's always been. He's going to perceive those things he thinks to be a profitable position on the issues, and that's what he's going to take in whatever race he's in at any particular time. Now, he may take new positions on the same issues that he was speaking about years ago, and to that extent you might call him a new Wallace, but fundamentally there's nothing new about George Wallace. He's just a very astute political person, and still is. And he'll be fun in 1976 for the Democrats and the Republicans.
Anything else?
I don't think so.
Anything else you want to add that we have not discussed, some insights?
What dark secret haven't you told us that we should have asked you about?
I don't have any secrets particularly. Well, I think the third thing I'd say about Goldwater was that he was made it possible to coalesce the new leadership in the Republican Party in the South. So those were three important things he did. Was make it possible to have a Republican Party in the South with the Black Belt areas. Second, he made it possible for you to have a national Republican Party. And third, he created a viable cadre of leadership throughout the Southern Republican Party.
Did he bring in, though, did he have the effect of bringing in to the Republican Party the elements of discord that you talked about originally from the other side of the Republican Party and the other wing of the party, say in Alabama and in many other states?
I don't know whether he brought them in or not. I think they naturally, you know, they were having trouble out in California with the Birch Society before the Goldwater thing, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. When did Nixon run for governor? In 1962? They were having trouble with that wing of the party before Goldwater already got cranked up. No, I don't think he brought them in, but I'll tell you, we sure had fits with them in the Goldwater nomination drive. And I was told on the floor of the Georgia Convention by the leader of the Birch Society there that he didn't care what Goldwater said or wanted done or anything else. I had Senator Goldwater on the telephone, and we were requesting that they do something or other and make some compromises with the leadership in Atlanta. They weren't going to listen to us. We had a fight with them in Arkansas. Well, we installed Governor Rockefeller as the national committee in Senator Goldwater's name. And were able to reduce their influence in the Arkansas Republican Party. And of course, we had them pretty well under wraps here in Alabama. But they were troublesome. And it was clear to see that they were going to be even more troublesome. Then when you decimated the ranks of the Republican Party in Alabama in 1966, it was just like ants coming through a honeycomb.
Has that had the same effect in most southern states?
I know they had a problem with it down in Texas, particularly in Houston. And it took John Tower and Peter O'Donnell, probably George Bush too, to solve it. I think they had that same problem in South Carolina.
Do you want to see the two parties realigned along liberal-conservative lines in the South?
Oh.
Or are they pretty much that way now?
I don't think that would necessarily be a good thing. But, with only two parties, it might get to be too rigid a situation, I think.
Are they moving that way now, or have they been that way?
Yes, I think probably they are moving that way. I think the major impact of Wallace leaving the scene, if he ever does, I'm not suggesting that he will, but if he ever is no longer an influence in politics, I think the major impact is going to be on the Democratic Party, because the leaders of the Democratic Party in the South, as far as I can perceive, are worlds away from George Wallace and his followers. And I think you'd have a Democratic Party without Wallace that was much more liberal than George Wallace is. You'd certainly be more in the stripe of Bob Vance. Not that Bob is that liberal, but certainly he would endorse and enthusiastically support any candidate of the Democratic Party, including McGovern or anybody else, I would think. And I think you have that kind of leadership throughout the Democratic Party in this. So I think the position of the Republican Party at a time when Wallace is no longer influential has got to be moderate to moderate conservative, but certainly not to the far right.
You see the Republican Party in the South being more like the Republican Party in the rest of the country.
Well, that's the evolution I would like to see. I think that's the only thing, I mean, that's the only rationale for a Republican Party in the South is to, I mean, the National Republican Party has created an elect presence. If you're going to have a viable Republican Party in the South, then the only rationale it can have is to be aligned in that effort. And it takes a national effort to do that. If you're going to build a Republican Party, it's going to be at odds with the Republican Party and the rest of the nation. That just doesn't make any sense.
Has Richard Nixon been good or bad for the Republican Party in the South?
I think over the long pull, he's been good. This recent Watergate thing, of course, has not been good for anybody. But certainly in 1960, he was helpful. In 1962, he was helpful. In 1964, he was helpful. In 66, he participated. And since he's been president, he's been helpful. He hadn't helped anybody with Watergate, least of all himself. So I think we have to accept that from anything that's said about him.
How has he been helpful since he's been president, insofar as the Republican Party in the South is concerned? Because in terms of growth and office holders, there's been very little. I mean, Alabama, 66% of the high point. South Carolina, 66% of the high point. Mm-hmm. North Carolina would be an exception to that. But most of the other southern states, Georgia has lost congressmen. Florida, I think, has actually lost congressmen and legislators. They haven't grown in Florida since 66.
Well, I don't think that can be. I say over the balance that Nixon has been helpful. I don't know that there's anything he could have done personally to cure the situations you mentioned.
What did he do for the party in 1972?
Well, I guess he didn't do anything down here. But I don't know that we had Blunt going. I mean, he could have helped Blunt, which he didn't.
Mississippi.
I don't really know what the extent of his activities were elsewhere, except that he came down to Atlanta, I guess, and had a Southwide meeting in Atlanta, which was nationally televised. I think he generally has talked favorably about the South, and he certainly hadn't treated the South in any stepchild kind of a way. I think he's given the impression of treating the South on a parity with the rest of the nation and within the Republican Party, the Southern Republicans on a parity. That, at least since 1960, that's a new attitude towards the Republicans in the South. But I think in the 1964 convention, we dropped the average age of the delegates something like 55 to 32 or something, about 30 years of age. And it takes a time to mature and time for that kind of a traumatic situation to stabilize.
Are you optimistic about the future of the Republican Party in Alabama?
No, I wouldn't say I was optimistic about it. I guess I think about it, study it. I don't know where it's going at this point. I don't know where the basic two-party system of the nation is going at this point. I think a lot of it depends on that.
Anything else? End interview with John Grenier. No more transcription this tape.